And here we are, 27 minutes to 3 o'clock on a Monday afternoon, and it's been an interesting weekend of politics and intrigue, and no one really knows what the heck is happening. But luckily, you're on the afternoon show on 88 with Penny Faree, our intrepid embedded journalist, and Warwick Chapman, who is a political commentator who knows, really, because he was there. I mean, gosh, you don't get more pedigreed than that. So welcome to you both.
Hello,
and
April.
let's have a look at what's been going on. It looks like, well, we know that the election has been declared free and fair, although not everyone agrees with that, which is not norm in South Africa. But it would appear that the results are being accepted by most. And no one knows who is going to be the new government of South Africa. So let's start there. Warwick, what's happening? There's no clear single outright winner who can now start laying down the law or changing things or keeping things the same. So where to from here?
So where to?
It's like a dog and pony show. Hey?
Okay, well, this is not unexpected in the wake of an election where a dominant party loses its majority. So it is expected to have a period where negotiations have to take place in order to form a coalition or at least a support agreement.
Is this the first time in South Africa that we are faced with the situation of a coalition government in modern South Africa?
Well, it's certainly the first time in democratic South Africa post 94, and prior to that, it was national government only changed hands in 1948 when the United Party lost to the Nats. So this is the second change in government in 76 years.
Wow.
National government.
Yeah. Okay, and so it is a momentous occasion.
And the first entrance of South Africa into coalition government at a national level.
Now, historically, coalitions on a minor scale have not been earmarked with enormous success. And I think about the various municipalities around the country that have entered into coalitions, mainly that have resulted in infighting and peculiar results, like a single seat becomes the mayor of Johannesburg from a party called, I can't even remember their name. That's how obscure they are. Mm-hmm. And clearly, that was an uncomfortable situation. Could it happen that the next president of South Africa could come from one of those singular seats somewhere on the ranks of the uninitiated? I don't know. Is that a possibility?
Under the current arrangement, no. Definitely not. I think that's a clear no. I think what's worth understanding is municipal coalitions are incredibly unstable in most South African cases because they involve trying to get the ANC out. So it's whatever small group of the DA plus smaller parties you can get together in order to keep the ANC out.
Oh.
The situation that we're potentially moving into is one where the ANC will be in. The ANC will be included, but included in a broader coalition. And so I think they have the chance of being significantly more stable because the block of parties that are invested is going to be a smaller group of bigger parties rather than a larger group of very small and sometimes fickle parties that get to demand the world.
Okay.
So if we look at the national scenario, the ANC has 40% of the vote. And they need support in order to get to 50% plus one. So let's just think about something like where is that support required? The first place that support's required is to elect a state president. So there's 400 seats in parliament. They're all going to sit down on day one. And one of the first things that they're going to do is they're going to elect the state president. So Cyril Ramaphosa is going to be put forward as the ANC's candidate, hypothetically, hopefully. And they're going to need to be at least 201 votes for Cyril in order for him to become president. That's an example of an arrangement where the ANC will need support because it won't have 201 votes to put on the table.
Wow. But let's even backtrack a little bit there, because it's not certain that Cyril Ramaphosa will be the candidate going forward towards the election of the president, because he's got to stand the test of time. Yeah. The 2 days' time is the NEC.
Mm. So let's talk about some of those risks now, because there's good signs for us in South Africa, I think. And we can go through those good signs after we go through some of the scary stuff. So the ANC's National Executive Committee, or NEC, is going to have to meet over the next couple of days. And Ramaphosa needs to survive the NEC. And the people who are going to be attacking him in the NEC are going to be the likes of Gwede Mantashe and Masina from Ekurhuleni, and Andile Lungisa, these Faith Mutambi and Zweli Mkhize, people who have all pretty much been implicated in state capture and are much more sympathetic to President Zuma than they are to President Ramaphosa.
Are these some of the 70 that are not going to make the cut in the ANC parliamentary ranks?
Absolutely.
So they could be literally, if they don't survive, they're out.
Mm-hmm. But the MK has also said that they would only look at a coalition with ANC if Ramaphosa resigned.
Correct.
So that also brings a whole new factor into it.
So, which is why these guys are going to be going after Ramaphosa in the NEC. Yeah. Now, Ramaphosa's team in the NEC is going to say, look, we knew that the ANC was going to lose support in the election. The ANC as a party knew that. They put that out in various scenarios beforehand. And we believe that we managed to stem our losses in all provinces except for KwaZulu-Natal. And we have enough evidence to demonstrate that the structure of the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal was complicit in the MK's success in KwaZulu-Natal. And so we primarily hold the ANC and KZN responsible and not President Ramaphosa. And we may, in a scenario where President Ramaphosa continues as the leader of the ANC, we may see the ANC in KZN being disbanded and replaced.
Wow, that's going to put us in the news. What about the Democratic Alliance? They formally laid criminal charges against the deputy president, Paul Mashatile, you know, on allegation charges in February. How is that going to play out? I mean, if they're going to look into a coalition with the ANC, I mean, that's going to be...
Look, I think the other thing that becomes really, really clear when you are putting coalitions together, if you think of the dynamic between the ANC and the DA in particular over the past couple of decades, it's highly acrimonious. These are not natural bedfellows, as it were.
Yeah, for sure.
But the good news is that we're not asking them to get into bed with one another, right? They're not making a baby. What they are having to do is collaborate to run a government. And how do you run a government? Basically, you pass one vote after another vote whether to do something or not. And they have to get on the same page about that over a series of these votes over the course of the next 5 years. So, you know, the DA is going to disagree with black economic empowerment. The ANC is going to say they want it. The DA is going to disagree with NHI, National Health Insurance. The DA is going to say they want it. And at some point, they have to compromise. That is the nature of coalition politics. And the DA knows that. Their chief negotiator, Ryan Kutsia, put out a fascinating piece in Business Live where he admits exactly that. They're going to have to compromise, and some of the things that they considered non-negotiable in the past will have to be negotiable, and the same applies to the ANC. If the ANC wants things to be non-negotiable, they must win more than 50% of the vote.
Do you think this is going to be a good thing for the country, or do you think it's going to be a bad thing? In other words, could it get worse than we've experienced in the past 5 years, or do you believe it's going to get better?
Look, at a high level, there's two paths. Path one is the ANC forms a government with the DA and the IFP. Let's call it the Government of National Unity. That's a good thing, and we can talk about why it's a good thing. Path two is the ANC forms an agreement with the EFF and or the MK, and that's a very bad thing. That's universally determined to be a bad thing across civil society and the international community.
So it would appear that the good thing, as you put it, the high road scenario would be an ANC-DA-IFP coalition. How likely is that to happen? If you were a gambling man, would you be placing big odds on that at the moment?
So, word has it that President Mbeki is chief negotiator, or at least chief architect of the so-called GNU plan, Government of National Unity plan, that the ANC has. The benefit here is that effectively puts President Mbeki in Cyril Ramaphosa's camp. And Mbeki is a respected elder statesman, and in the NEC he will have some sway over some of those, the National Executive Committee of the ANC, he will have some sway over some of the undecided delegates there. So I think that puts us into a positive terrain in terms of probability. The other thing is that President Zuma is the incumbent, and incumbency always brings with it at least the benefit of inertia. And so, you know, he's already at 50% or more there. Yeah. And then for those people who in the National Executive Committee who do have a genuine interest in the long-term survival of the ANC, I think that there have been several convincing arguments made that a tie-up with the EFF or the MK would definitely result in the destruction of the ANC at the next elections. The ANC has clearly admitted that they understand that voters have spoken, that voters have said this is as a result of failure to deliver. Tying up with the MK and the EFF is not going to improve the ANC's ability to deliver.
But they lose votes, though.
Quite the opposite.
I mean, I've been looking at the social media and all the comments, and there were so many people that were pro-ANC that said that if they get into bed with the DA, that's the end of their membership.
Oh, but you see, social media, those, you know, they probably maybe saw, 40 or 50 out of... The big teller for me is that the voter count was, did I hear correctly when the news this morning said it was one of the lowest turnouts of any election in the history of South Africa?
It's the lowest turnout in a national and provincial election
That speaks volumes. That's where I think the voters really spoke, and it would appear that it was ANC voters that largely stayed away.
Correct. So who are the least motivated voters to turn out? ANC voters.
The young group, though. I think it was
MK voters are motivated because they want to see this new thing happen, and opposition voters are motivated because they want to come out and they want to stave off this threat. So ANC voters were definitely the least motivated, and I think it was 57% overall. 57% is definitely the lowest. It was 66% last time.
So the country is ripe for change. Everyone seems to agree that it's ripe for change. Now we're going to get change. How dramatic do you think it's going to be?
I think it's going to be dramatic.
Are the markets going to turn around and start pumping?
What happens if the IEC, I mean, MK have said they've got evidence, which is sub judice, because on Saturday, the journalists were asking us, what are your evidence? And they couldn't say, because they've got evidence of the allegations of voter rigging. And what happens if the IEC sees this, and then they changed it from recount to a revote? Is that possible, that landscape?
No. So the election has been declared. The results have been formalized.
So there's no going back.
There's no going back. Right. And let's be clear on this radio station. There is no such thing in South Africa as sub judice. When you hear it, you know that whoever is telling you that is trying to hide something. And they're trying to hide behind a concept that they think is going to bamboozle you.
Yeah.
But it doesn't exist in South Africa.
Unless it causes issues of state security. If state security is jeopardized, then that's the only time that sub judice can actually be applied. Which is very rare.
Extremely rare. There's a formal test for it. A judge has to rule, and only then is it sub judice. Yeah. So in, for all intents and purposes, it doesn't exist. Now, so, but sorry, let me let me just say one more thing. There are a few good signs that we already have out there to indicate that there's some momentum for this either formal coalition between the DA, IFP, ANC, or this government of national unity option, which is a good thing. It has to be a good thing because the alternative is clearly bad, right? So one, it's clear the MK has overreached. The fear-mongering anti-IEC speech that President Zuma gave on Saturday evening at the IEC was a step too far. And the IEC were absolutely right to deny his request for a delay and to announce the results accordingly. It's a very important internationally accepted principle when it comes to elections that you announce the results quickly. Any delay can be the cause of unrest and violence. Okay? The second thing is Gwede Mantashe is not part of the negotiating team for the ANC. This is really important. And he's the one who's most likely and most influential to drive support for the MK and the EFF. Now, this may change with the NEC activities, but at the moment, he's not part of the team. The third thing is the Secretary General of the ANC, Fikile Mbalula, made it very, very clear over the weekend that they are considering a GNU, Government of National Unity, with two deputy president posts. So that gives us the idea that the IFP and the DA become the two other stakeholders, and that they will not negotiate if Cyril Ramaphosa is taken out of the equation. So that takes the MK out of the equation altogether. And then further, the ANC has also, both in Cyril's speech and in the Secretary General's comments, indicated that they won't work with parties that don't put the South African Constitution first.
Okay, and then the MK, obviously, you know, they want to change it.
That excludes the MK, and to some extent, that excludes the EFF. So I think those are all pretty good signs, and as long as that sentiment can hold sway in the National Executive Committee of the ANC, hopefully that means Cyril emerges in control, and this negotiating process can then continue. And I remind you that the Constitution gives the negotiating parties 2 weeks to arrive at a conclusion. I certainly hope it doesn't take that long. I think that they are all aware that this is a period of great uncertainty for South Africa and for South Africans, and that there is a evidential threat of unrest. Large numbers of additional police have been deployed to hotspots around the country, principally KwaZulu-Natal, and they have a long deployment. They're here for 2 to 3 weeks.
The District Commissioner of Ilembe, Major General Gopal, said they had a meeting with all the station commanders in the district, and he said the public order police unit and the tactical response teams have all been deployed to the area. And even last night, they were all deployed to, he said, mall, CBD, tourist accommodation sites, and even critical infrastructure. They're all there ensuring the safety of the region. So everyone is on high alert at the moment.
But it looks like everyone's on side, which is a very good thing.
Yeah, no vacuum there.
So can we cautiously be cautiously optimistic that we are now headed for possibly a brighter future, because it's been a long time coming? And if that is the case, well, three cheers for a job well done.
Well, they did get a proverbial election slap in the face, hey, the ANC, so maybe that was their wake-up call. I don't know. I'm just praying for cool heads to prevail over the next couple of days and see how everything unfolds.
Well, it's going to be, that's really the message, is wait and see. But Warwick, thank you for that insight. It does tend to lean towards a more optimistic viewpoint, and we can cling to that as South Africans that are all hoping for a better future for everyone across the board. We could be facing a really, really interesting couple of weeks, as well, hopefully not that long, hey, as the deliberations are held and the announcement that is made, well, that will be a cause for celebration or not, but what will be will be.
Yeah. Do we have any time to talk about the province?
We have got about 7 minutes, if you can.
Okay, super. So I do just also want to answer something that I gave you a very long-winded response here, unaccustomed as I am. But you asked me if I was a betting man.
Yeah.
I think it's like 65-35 that we're going...
In favor of the high road.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to place there. I'll take that bet.
I wanted to say 70-30, but I know us South Africans are inherently optimistic and hopeful, so I toned it down a bit. But let's talk about the province. So the province is really fascinating. And I want to preface these remarks by saying that KwaZulu-Natal is by far the most relevant province in South Africa politically. Okay? And not least of all because we have this wild card element of President Zuma, but also... And historically, the Zulu nation.
Called the ANC Zulus. That was the ANC Zulu section of the ANC, hey, KZN.
Sure. Yeah. What happened with Mkhonto weSizwe was an expression of Zulu nationalism. And it's not a new thing, and it shouldn't even be considered to be a contentious thing, because the Zulu nation has been expressing itself militarily and politically in this country for 200 years. So whether it's Isandlwana back in the day, whether it's the unrest in the 80s and the 90s, whether it's the threat to not participate in the election on the eve of the 1994 elections, or whether it was Zulus responding to President Zuma, who is now the arch Zulu in KwaZulu-Natal, whether it was responding to his call, this is all the Zulu nation just basically saying, hey guys, never forget, we are 100% Zulu first. Now, KwaZulu-Natal has 80 seats in the provincial legislature, 80. And you couldn't have scripted this better for dramatic effect. The Mkhonto weSizwe party won... 37 seats, okay, and the EFF have 2 seats. So if the two of them team up, they've got 39, which is 1 short of 50%. Okay.
Yeah.
The ANC, the DA, and the IFP together have 40 seats, which is exactly dead on 50%, and 1 vote, 1 seat short of a majority that's required to get anything done.
Okay.
Okay, that all adds up to 79. And the last seat in the legislature was won by a party called the National Freedom Party. And it won it with 0.56 of a seat. It didn't win enough votes to win a full seat, but it ended up having a large enough remainder to win the last seat. The National Freedom Party was a breakaway of the IFP that was fermented by the ANC about 15 years ago. And they have the ability to, if this government of national unity does form at a national level, the NFP have the ability to give that GNU coalition control of KwaZulu-Natal.
Well, that is fascinating because I thought it was a slam dunk that it had gone to MK. Yeah.
It has not.
Wow. That's a real turn up for the books.
The MK does not have a path to govern KwaZulu-Natal. And I've seen this, this slam dunk assumption from a couple of journalists already.
Yeah.
But the MK does not have a path to government in KwaZulu-Natal without the ANC. Because, or the IFP, which is hopefully unlikely, particularly if the IFP is entangled at a national level. So the ANC would have to work with MK, or the IFP would have to work with MK, and we really hope that those are not possibilities.
Sure. So it becomes like a Game of Thrones saga.
More and more intriguing as the revelations are made. And thank you for that, Warwick. Very insightful overview, Penny, as usual. Keeping the pot boiling, as they say. An unusual extra edition of the uncensored that you've come to expect from Penny, although it's become more of a political intrigue than anything else.
Everything's on hold at the moment.
But we look forward to the next edition of Uncensored. And as soon as things become a little clearer, Warwick, can we reconvene for a next
Wednesday.
A next edition? Well, Wednesday is a guarantee. Yes. If anything happens before Wednesday, maybe we'll be back again tomorrow. But hey, you know, anything can happen, and this is our beloved country and a wonderful story to tell. Once again, Penny Faree, journalist at large, and Warwick Chapman, political commentator. Thanks so much for that insightful extra on the afternoon show. The afternoon show.